This episode of the Inside Transportation Podcast is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress. From connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. The Inside Transportation Podcast is also sponsored by the law firm of Fenwick & West. Fenwick & West is one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and transportation. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at Fenwick.com. That's F-E-N-W-I-C-K.com. Now, on to the show. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm the writer of the Inside Transportation and Insider Electric Vehicles newsletters. And I am joined here by my co-host, angel investor, podcaster, the man who always orders his In-N-Out burger, animal style, Inside.com CEO Jason Calacanis. How's it going?
It's true. I like an animal style, and the burger wars have escalated, and I am there for it, as the kids say, as the millennials are saying. I am so there for it.
So let's talk real quick about that. Are you talking like Shake Shack versus In-N-Out? What are you talking about?
Well, we ordered Shake Shack. I feel like Shake Shack is in New York really amazing when you wait in line in Madison Square Park, and then I ordered it to the house on Uber Eats. It was acceptable. I would say Five Guys and Shake Shack, they're a nice addition to have alongside of In-N-Out, but In-N-Out is just, there's something just so classic about the nice animal style. There is one I like even more these days, which is called Bel Campo, B-E-L.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it on our
Bel Campo is like using, these are like, we're now getting to like $14 hamburgers, so it's kind of like, it's getting a little ridiculous.
Versus like a $3 In-N-Out or $4 In-N-Out.
I think $4 you're In-N-Out, so you literally can buy three of them or two and a half of them for the price of a Bel Campo burger. It's like 12 or 14 bucks, but they're using like the grass-fed beef. And so I'm a high and low kind of guy, which is my favorite Kurosawa film for folks out there. In his noir period, just a little drop. I like the high and the low. I can eat the Bel Campo burger and I can eat the In-N-Out burger, and I appreciate them for what they are. Sometimes, I do that sneaky little drive-through, which has been great, during the pandemic to go through the drive-through. What's going on in your world?
Yeah, I bring up In-N-Out. So first of all, let me just say this. I bring up In-N-Out because I don't know if you saw this on Twitter today, and we'll have it in the show notes, but Tesla's opening a supercharger right next to an In-N-Out location in Beaumont, California, which is about 30 minutes outside of Palm Springs. And I'm sure you're familiar with those In-N-Out shirts, right? Like the classic shirts with the classic cars sitting outside of the In-N-Out. Some guy on Twitter is suggesting to redesign the shirt design to include Teslas. So that would be kind of cool.
That's 100. And given Tesla's market cap at this point, I think Tesla should just buy... Elon should just buy In-N-Out Burger.
Whoa.
And literally just put a Model 3 outside. I mean, this is why I get paid the big bucks, John. It's this this creative thinking is he just buys In-N-Out and he puts Teslas outside and it becomes a place to test drive a Tesla while you're going animal style. And he should just change ludicrous mode and then just add animal style mode for the self-driving or for speed.
I endorse this idea. One thing I was going to tell you, though, which is kind of interesting, happening in my world, I actually got signed up to be a part of the COVID-19 vaccine trial, the Moderna vaccine, which everyone's talking about. So as you saw in the news, probably there's 30,000 people that are going to be testing the vaccine, and I'm most likely going to be one of them. So I think the trial is
so thankful for you as a human being doing that. That speaks to your character And, you know, yeah. I have three kids, and just on behalf of everybody in the world, thank you for doing that, Johan. It's,
I mean, this is an exclusive to this podcast. I'm not even telling my parents about it because I'm sure they would be concerned, but they don't listen to this podcast, so it doesn't matter. But yeah, so I'm going to be a part of that. I think half of the group is going to be a placebo. Half of the group is going to be the actual vaccine. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if I get this vaccine, if it actually produces antibodies. So,
okay, so 50% chance we have to put out a job opening for the co-host of Inside Transportation. And 50% chance you'll be on the next episode. I'm sorry, I don't mean to get
50%
dark.
50% chance I grow a third arm or a
In all reality, what is the assumed risk you're taking?
So I can actually send this to your personal email, the whole docket they sent me of notes. But it's basically very minimal. And I'm sure you heard about that on the news too, is that they're finding that there's very minimal risk. I think some of the symptoms are just like body aches and you know, like a low grade fever and stuff like that, which is very similar to the actual symptoms of COVID-19, right? So it'll be kind of interesting
how
to see.
How old
like,
are you, Johan? And
I am 27 years old.
Okay, so you're in the absurdly low risk. You do not have diabetes. I don't want to get too personal here, but may I ask?
We'll go through my vitals. No diabetes, no blood sugar. I have asthma and I have allergies and that's it. But other than that, don't have any diseases. I'm very low risk.
Is your asthma like severe, or is it like if you try to run
it's just
really fast that you get it?
It's very, very, very like
great.
Non-existent, right?
All right. Well, here comes the next important question. What are you getting paid? Because they do pay people for this.
$2,000 $2,000 to test the vaccine. So
that seems too low for me. I think that the people who take this are like real heroes, and it should be more like $25,000. And we should really incentivize people for the risk. And even if the risk is low, you know, society has a lot of money, and this is causing a massive disruption, obviously, to the economy. Mm-hmm. I was saying early on that because of the business disruption that's happening, we should really suspend in a major way, you know, some norms and assumed risk, which I think they did with some of the drugs. They said like, you can take this, like with, you know, you take the assumed risk, you write the, you know, you sign a disclaimer or whatever, you're signing a waiver obviously to do this, but man, we should really let people cash up. I mean, I think you should get a Ford Bronco. I think you should get a Ford Bronco for this.
If anyone throws me 25K, I'm not going to be mad about that. But
we are going to talk about the Bronco today, right? It's on the docket.
We are going to talk about the Bronco. That is on the docket. And in 2020, what's old is new again, Jason. It's really hard to find things these days, right? Bikes, for instance, are like non-available in every store. The other day, I tried to find a kayak, and they were backordered by like a month.
Yeah, now people are kayaking to work, obviously, because they're living across lakes. Yeah. No, people have time, and they're taking their hobbies up, and they're losing their minds. So things like bikes and, you know, kayaks, apparently, are going to become in short supply because people are looking for something to do that's solo, right, or semi or smaller.
Yeah, and also when I say what's old is new again, is that every company now wants to go public because Nikola has done fairly well as a public company. In case you guys didn't know, Nikola is a startup that has yet to actually develop a vehicle, but they're making a hydrogen electric vehicle. And I remember when companies wanted to remain private as long as they could, but there's a resurgence of a company, right? That Mr. Jason Calacanis is not a huge fan of.
Oh, no.
But Fisker.
Jesus.
Not to be confused with Fisker Automotive. The defunct bankrupt company that eventually became Karma Automotive is going public.
What?
Jason. They're going public through a special purpose acquisition corporation.
They're spacking it? Oh, no.
Yes, they're spacking it. This would be completed via a reverse acquisition. It would be modeled after recent public listings from Nikola and Velodyne Lighter, who is also going public through a SPAC. The SPAC is backed by private equity firm Apollo and would raise about $552 million. It would finance the Fisker acquisition through a combination of money it raised plus borrowed funds. Fisker is working on an electric SUV called the Ocean, which is due in late 2022. The vehicle is expected to deliver about 300 miles of range and will start under $40,000. Now, what I thought was interesting is that I went through this investor deck that the company put together, right?
Okay.
And, you know, I was seeing like, okay, well, are they developing their own drivetrain, batteries? How is this going to work, right? What they legit, and I've never seen this.
What are they bringing
to
the table?
Right?
Yes.
This is what they're bringing to the table, right? Fisker told investors that it is in discussions, not even, you know, closed deal. No, not a done deal.
They're talking
right?
to.
They're talking to Volkswagen.
Conversing with Volkswagen.
About the company's MEB platform, which
they had a Zoom call.
EVs.
Sounds reasonable. Give them $500 million.
Yeah. So they're telling people, we plan to maybe use MEB for our vehicles. Because Volkswagen's been open about partnering with other automakers. But even Volkswagen was like, we don't have a done deal with like Fisker, you know? So it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, there's been a lot of hype right now on electric vehicles. Nikola, Tesla, I mean, you've seen the stock price go above, you know, out of the roof. Rivian also closed an additional round of $2.5 billion. And if you guys subscribe to our business newsletter, inside.com/business, there's actually some really nice charts and graphs kind of going over.
Yeah,
how much money,
the research team has Rivian been doing has some raised. Nice graphs. Did we put them into the into your newsletter as well or no?
I think we did.
Good. Okay. Yeah. So what I want you to, just so people know for background, you know, we have great journalists like Johan on the team, but we hired some business journalists who know how to make charts and graphs and do data analysis. So I really want you to lean on them, use them as a resource, Johan, and then tweet the heck out of them. And when you tweet one, make sure you tweet me, you know, at mention me or something or DM me so I can retweet it. Because people love data and charts, and it's really a good way to look at should this be occurring, right? When we're analyzing the news, we don't want to just talk about headlines. We want to actually look at reality. And the reality here is Fisker, how many cars has Fisker ever, electric cars, did Fisker, the original one, ever deliver? What was the reliability of those? How much did they cost? And how much did Fisker...
Well, you heard a lot of complaints.
Oh my God. I had a friend cars. Who bought one and was like, this is the biggest piece of ish I've ever owned in my life across any product category. I brought it back to them. I threw the keys in the guy's face and was like, take this back or I'm suing you. And they took it back. But yeah, I mean, the idea that Fisker would be a good investment and would have any chance of competing against, you know, not only Tesla, but, you know, we both know Ford is, you know, got the Mustang coming out. Rivian is a real company, right? We agree on that. Mm-hmm. Ford is mm-hmm. a very real company.
Which, by the way, I'm going to send you this video of a Ford Mach-E ripping, doing donuts. You need to see this. I'm going to send it to you via Slack. But yes, Rivian and Ford, they're doing some great work with EVs.
I mean, Fisker is like, it's just, if you want to, here's what I would advise. If you were thinking of being, let's say, $1 million of the $500 million in this round, I would encourage you to take the $1 million and go to Vegas and buy a $1 million chip and then put it on either black or red on the roulette table with the best odds you could find in the town and who would be willing to take this bet. You have a better chance of doubling your money from that than from giving any money to this Fisker SPAC nonsense. That's my personal belief. And I'm saying that because I invest for a living. And this advice is worth what you paid for it, which is $0. But what's happening now is very dangerous, actually, Johan, which is when a company gets escape velocity like a Tesla does, you get all these like weirdos who come out of the woodwork and start doing weird things to try to dupe retail investors. And mm-hmm. because one looks like the other. And then when you open it up to your point, like this company had a phone call, like, do they have a dreadnought making batteries? Did they buy a battery company? Remember, you know, Tesla's bought that other battery company. Are they Ford yeah. and put, you know, I don't know what Ford put into, how many billions of dollars they've poured into their EV program at this point to catch up to Elon. Like, there are people who are highly credible, and then there are people who have had a phone call, you know, like,
right. I mean, like, just to add there, Ford has invested $11 billion into electric vehicles.
I mean, this is just, this is really dangerous. This is really pissing me off, I'll be totally honest, because I saw this movie before in the dot-com era. And mm-hmm. I really think, you know, we should circle back around with the inside business team of, you know, talking about bubbles. We now have an electric mm-hmm. car bubble. Elon has said multiple occasions, right? Hey, the stock price is pretty damn high. And they are crushing it. Universally, people agree.
Stock price was high and it was like $700
right.
too.
And I think that's when he said the stock price is kind of high. And, you know, I think one analyst that I read said, you know, if they're making 500 cars now, they need to really be making, I don't know, 3 or 4 million in order to justify this price and the model. So people are putting a lot of faith into Tesla, which I don't believe that that's unwarranted. We've talked about this before. Elon's a tremendous entrepreneur, and I don't own Tesla shares. I don't own SpaceX shares. I am friends with Elon from, you know, to being in the tech industry, we're friendly. that being said, you know, just because one company goes to the moon does not mean that everybody gets to do that. And what this is just piling on, and I'm also an investor in the company Robinhood, full disclosure. We were, you know, early investors in that company. And, you know, you got 13 million people there buying shares. You got the kid from Barstool Sports, who's hilarious, who's now turned
El Presidente.
El Presidente, yes. He has turned
your new hero.
It's great performance art, and I don't have a problem with people gambling and wagering. I love to play poker. I like gambling. But what I will say to anybody who's thinking of gambling on this kind of thing, like Fisker, going through some SPAC or whatever, not that SPACs are problematic. SPACs are like a legitimate financial device, but buyer beware. And buying the, you know, 70th or 17th most qualified person in a race is like going to the horse track and you see like somebody's a 50-1 odd or 101-1 odd and they make some movie about it, right? And they win the race. Like there's a reason the handicappers made them 50-1, like, or 100-1. It's like me betting the Knicks are going to win, you know, everything next year and they don't have one all-star on the team. Period, end of story.
Right, but I think when you think about it, right, Apollo, which is a private equity firm that's backing the SPAC, they probably see that there's money to be made. And that's all they care about, right? They just want to increase their bottom line. So I think this is purely just a move from, first of all, Fisker to stay afloat, right? And to find financing and to kind of capitalize on the moment where you have...
they're riding Nikola, the coattails.
You know, riding the coattails of people's interest in not having any sports right now, which I think is the case.
Of why they're day trading, correct?
Yeah, yeah.
And
I mean, once you have NBA back, you know, and NFL and all these sports, I don't know if we're going to see as many
people
young
don't need
people
the juice.
Investing, although,
they don't.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows?
They don't need the action.
I mean, I think at the end of the day, the retail investors are the ones that get screwed over. With this
there just aren't
deal,
that many
right?
retail investors, so that's the good news. And then anybody who's got half a brain understands that stock picking is not a long-term way to create wealth if you are not doing it full-time and dedicating a decade of your life to it. Realize there are people who, you know, quants and insiders and people with, you know, literally thousands of employees who went to like the best schools in the world and or are savants who are trading stocks. And then you think you're going to casually get on Robinhood and beat them just picking stocks. That's not exactly how it works. I encourage people, if you want to do that kind of wagering, betting, that's totally fine with 5% of your, you know, portfolio. But and the same thing goes for cryptocurrency. If you want to put 1, 2, 3, 4, 5% in Bitcoin and you know, do a flyer or angel invest like I do for a living, that's fine. But there are these Vanguard funds and there are low fee funds that put you in an index and that you don't, the indexes typically beat the stock pickers. So in that case, you know, as a civilian, you know, going into a casino, you know, just buyer beware. Anyway, it's just.
But you know what your Tesla doesn't have, Jason? California mode. So with the press of one button on Fisker's upcoming vehicle, if it does get made, all the windows can lower down with one button.
Oh, that's so dumb. No, you know what? Tesla had that feature. Fisker is such a thief. He literally watches what Fisker watches Tesla and steals the features. And on the original Tesla, it had that feature where you double clicked. The problem with that feature is you could inadvertently do it. And, you know, like let's say you're walking away from the car and you inadvertently do it as you're getting into the elevator in the parking garage. And now your car is compromised. Or it used to have it, I think, if you double clicked, it would raise and lock all of them, which then if your arm was in it, your arm could get caught in it. So I actually think Tesla took that feature out. I'm 99. Yeah, they did have that feature. We'll have to.
Was that on the Roadster?
No. I think it was on the Model S and certainly on the Model X. You know, the Model X, if you double click and the doors are open, they close, all four of them at once. So Fisker is just copying more Tesla features. He rides on Elon's coattails. This is the lamest bullshit ever. Next story.
Well, there you go. Anyway,
don't lose your money, people.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be talking about how can the U.S. become a leader in electric vehicles. Stay tuned. Find out more when we come back on the Inside Transportation Podcast.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Thanks again to Ford for sponsoring independent media like this podcast.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation Podcast. Johan Marino, Jason Calcanis, talking about the week's hottest topics, one of them being electric vehicles, as always. Chances are, if you drive through your neighborhood, depending on where you live, that is, it may be difficult to find an electric vehicle parked out on the street. With exception to you, Jason, because you live in Silicon Valley. But that may change soon if Joe Biden gets elected president, as he wants to make the U.S. a leader in electric vehicles. But the U.S. has a long way to go. Michael Stumo, who's the CEO of the Coalition for a Prosperous America, believes the U.S. is losing the EV arms race to China. Benchmark Mineral Intelligence reported that China has about 107 battery megafactories that are operating or are in the pipeline. The U.S. only has three currently operating, with six in the pipeline. 47% of all EVs on the road globally are in China, according to a global EV outlook. And, you know, Biden's trying to propose these, add these proposals to his campaign, saying that he wants to scale up domestic production of EVs and build about 500,000 charging stations throughout the U.S. Currently, there's about 60,000-ish around the U.S. But, you know, Jason, my question to you is, what can the U.S. do to expand or to become a leader in electric vehicles? Because as you've seen, right, there hasn't been a lot of support from the government when it comes to EVs.
Yeah.
You know, when you think about even getting a tax incentive, if you're buying a Tesla.
I know, those
right?
went away, right? Those
car.
Are all gone. I know in my first couple, out. I used to, yeah. I think I got $10,000 back on the Roadster and $5,000 back, or $7,500 on the others.
Boom.
And you know what? It actually was meaningful. You know, like you're talking about 5%, 7%. And so incentives matter. And it's very important that we have a free market where people compete, but incentives do drive behavior. And
But you also have to, just a quick note, you also have to know that those incentives, right, that people get for EVs, they're non-refundable. So for a lot of Americans who actually don't pay any income tax out of pocket, from what I've heard, they actually aren't able to take advantage of that.
Okay, right? So there's a way then to do that, which would be on the $30,000 segment of vehicles or $40,000 segment of vehicles, you could come up with a different type of incentive, such as the great incentive when you had the original Roadster was at LAX, in the short-term parking, there were 15 spots. I kid you not, 1-5. And I could drive my Roadster, and there would be like maybe, I don't even know what other EVs existed. The RAV4, remember the old RAV4 with that big like laptop-sized charger?
Tesla battery one, right?
Well, yes. Tesla had given them some stuff, and it had this like weird charging paddle. Anyway, long story short, I could roll up in my Roadster, park in like the VIP parking, the equivalent of handicap parking, frankly. There was handicap parking that was, you know, there were whatever, 10 handicap parking spaces. And then right after those, the next group were people with 100% EV, and you got to go in the HOV lane, all this other benefits. It was free. It was free.
Whoa.
$30 a day parking. And it was so joyful for me. And it literally made no economic impact on me other than being able to brag and save 15 minutes getting in and out. And the people at the, you just had this wonderful conversation as you left the airport parking at Terminal 1 at LAX, because they knew, like they would like know you, and they would have to write down your license plate and your VIN number to make sure they let you out for free. And I would be like, yep, we're going on a, you know, the only catch was, you know, if I was going away for more than a week, I didn't want to leave the car there because it's an expensive car. I didn't want to put a cover on the car, right? So you did have that little sort of thing.
Yeah.
But anyway, incentives super matter. And people would also – this also existed in the Santa Monica parking garages. So one thing I've noticed, I think you must have noticed it as well, during the pandemic, and every crisis, you know, you learn things. I did not realize how dirty the air – in Northern California was until we stopped driving cars during the pandemic. And you, and we have very high regulations and very small number of cars, you know, in terms of the land mass for a city like San Francisco. At night, I can see stars like I never could. And the sky looks crisp and blue. And you notice this difference too, right? I'm sure everybody's kind of reporting it that during the pandemic, and there was somebody who was taking pictures and they could see, I forgot what, maybe it was the Himalayan mountains or something, you know.
Yeah, I think there was that image from India.
Yeah, in India, somebody's like, look.
People from India, yeah.
You can see the Himalayas.
Nature, we're around nature.
So this is like the perfect thing to run on. And for Biden, it's a no-brainer. And the cash for clunkers concept, where if your car is, you know, really dirty, you know, it's 30 years old, whatever, we're going to just give you $3,000 towards an EV. That could be the difference in decision-making. And the important thing is not to give any one company too big of an advantage, right? So maybe this is available to X number of people per year. If, you know, X times two want to do it, it's a lottery. You get the idea. Or maybe we take the dirtiest vehicles first. So you say, like, listen, if you've got a vehicle, you know, that's under 10 miles per gallon, and then we're going to take vehicles under 15 miles per gallon. You get the idea. So it's a wonderful idea, and it's a de minimis amount of money when you look at the incredible impact it will have on society. The global the charging station thing, I think, is problematic, because if you put the government in charge of those charging stations, they're going to work as well as everything else the government manages. So I would not have the government do that. I would have the government give incentives to, you know, 20 different companies that operate them, and give them venture loans that were 30-year long loans that were 1% a year or 0%, you know, whatever the lowest you could give, and or equity in those companies.
Charge point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Like they could just invest $100 million, because all the money that Fisker took a bunch of that money back in the day, right? And then went out of business. Mm-hmm. And then there were other battery companies. Solera, I think, was one of the solar.
Solera. And then I think Lordstown Motors was trying to apply for that.
You know who paid all theirs back early?
Talked about.
Tesla Motors, right? So if the government was run competently, they would do this two ways. One, you give the loan, but then for the loan, let's say I give you $100 million charge point. I give you the $100 million, it's a loan. I also want warrants for 5% of the company that the government can execute at any time in the next 20 years. A warrant is the right to buy a share at a predetermined price. So if the company was worth $1 billion and there were 1 billion shares and it was $1 a share, you would give the government the ability to buy 50 million shares for $50 million. Now let's say the share does what Tesla did and goes to $1,500 a share. Now the government gets to execute on that warrant. In other words, they buy it for $1 and they get the $1,499, which then would make it profitable for the government. So this could actually be, if the government,
there you go.
I mean, that would put the government in competition with venture capitalists, et cetera. You know, it would be a great use of capital because incentives drive people. And just think about if we had remember they were talking about $6, $7, $8 a gallon gasoline. Remember when it hit $4 or $5?
Yeah, I remember.
Do you remember people changing their behavior? Do you remember people? Remember the Honda? Was that the Insight? What was that tiny little hybrid that came before the Prius?
Yeah, there was a Honda Insight.
That got 60 miles a gallon, 70 miles a gallon.
Yeah, my sister actually still has one.
Well,
so she bought it when it came out.
People wouldn't sell them because people were in competitions to see how slow they could drive in the right-hand lane and draft behind other vehicles. And there's like a community of people on message boards like Reddit with Honda Insights who have shown like 90 miles to the gallon. That's the kind of shit you want going down, right? You want people competing to make the environment better. And we are in an ideological and cold war with China right now. And the playing field is business.
There you go.
And we talked about it on my other podcast, All In podcast. Mm-hmm. And it really is something we need to think about, because if they do beat us in electric vehicles, they do beat us with TikTok, you know, this has big ramifications because they're a communist country and we're a democracy. And that's beyond the scope of this podcast, but every American should want to have these incentives out there.
And they're trying to be the only global superpower, right? China. And look, my perspective is, as an American, right? You know, China's schooling us at electric vehicles, at next generation energy products, right? And that should be concerning, not just to the government, but every automaker in the U.S., right? Because we ultimately aren't going to have any say on our supply chain.
Bingo.
Because everything's going to be consolidated in China, right?
Yeah.
And they can basically charge whatever they want. And especially if, let's say, oil prices do go up after the pandemic or something happens where we're not going to have as much accessibility to oil, there's going to be a problem. Here is an interesting thing, actually, that's not in the notes, but something I read online this week. They were actually exploring whether there would ever be a situation where Elon Musk could get arrested in China.
No.
Because he keeps getting, you know, he keeps expanding Tesla in China.
No, I mean, you cannot do business in China without the explicit cooperation of the government. I mean, they love him over there. I mean, he's well loved. He spends a lot of time there. Here's the thing. It's not like China wants to take over the world. China wants to see they have a very Trumpian approach, is the, from what I understand, and I'm no expert, but you don't need to look at them like Putin, or, you know, a crazy, you know, world dominating group of people. What they want to do is improve the life of their citizens. And that's what their citizens want. And that's why their citizens are working so hard. They want to move from something like, you know, not having running water to having running water, then to having, you know, an apartment, then to having a car, right? They're basically moving into the middle class. Mm-hmm. And so that really is the motivation. And they're also trying to keep order. And if you look at what's happening in Hong Kong, they've lost control of Hong Kong, right? It's chaos. And the New York Times moved their Hong Kong bureau to Korea. Australia is offering anybody who's a Hong Kong citizen to come there, I believe, and they're going to fast track their visa and give them like 5 years. no questions asked. So basically, anybody rich, powerful, successful, intelligent, entrepreneurial in Hong Kong, you know, except for the people who really want to fight and die for it, and literally they're fighting and dying for it or being put in prison for freedom, they're going to go to Taiwan, Korea, and Australia in Japan. Those are the top places. So, you know, China's got its own issues that it has to deal with, right? And ultimately for humanity, it's great that there is a competition between different countries and operating systems. I call them operating systems: democracy, communism, socialism, social democracies, whatever you want to call it, dysfunctional capitalism.
That's how you know you're a tech entrepreneur.
Yeah, no, I mean, but if you just think about them like operating systems, you know, they different ones have different strengths and weaknesses. And one of the strengths of the communist operating system, the communist capitalism operating system, because they're doing some capitalism there, is that when they want to build something and the government, you know, agrees, or the province agrees, because it is like the United States in terms of there are regions and provinces, they can just say, like, we're building this factory, you know, we're going to build 50 nuclear reactors, and that's it, we've made the decision. Whereas in the US, the citizens get to fight it, and they have, we have a court system, and we can battle it. And if you, like, literally my local town is having like an all-out war over 18 cell phone towers, and you know, it's there's five different constituents battling over 20 different things over literally bringing 18 cell towers to a town of 3,500 homes. That's where we are in terms of the evolution of our operating system. Can you imagine people in, you know, China or Cuba or Venezuela or Russia being like, I am going to stop Putin from putting up 18 cell towers. They'd be like, no, you're not. Get back in your house. Like, it just doesn't work that way. So, you know, there's pluses and minuses.
And you just disappear.
We don't need to beat China. We don't need to beat China. We need to have some redundancy in our supply chain. Again, back to the crisis and what we learned during the pandemic. And thank you for your serious sacrifice in flipping a coin with the vaccine trials. I mean, really just amazing. I'm so impressed. And not surprised, but still impressed. We have learned about clean air. One of the other things we've learned about is, my God, did we over-optimize the supply chain? Look at the PPP, PPE. We can't make masks in the United States. Look at drugs. It turns out Wuhan is where all the drugs come from, legal and illegal drugs. Like my understanding is, and somebody will correct me, that fentanyl and like those kind of drugs also come out of there. So, to your point about batteries or rare earth minerals, we have rare earth minerals in the United States. We just shut the factories down and we stop digging for them because China can do it cheaper. And the iPhone could be made here.
And we have people who want to work
well,
too.
Well, we didn't.
Right?
We and didn't before this. We were at all-time low unemployment, and that was the problem. So now what we've got to start thinking about is the North. We have to start thinking about the Americas. This is my personal belief. Forget about America. Think about the Americas. We have a wonderful, wonderful country just south of us. And we are, you know, trying to build a wall to keep them out when we should, in fact, be saying, oh, do you guys actually want to work in factories? You know, when we had this record low unemployment. Great. Why don't we put, and I'm just thinking out loud here in terms of, you know, like ways to really solve these problems. What if we just did a partnership with Mexico and said, hey, we want to build 50 battery factories down there? You know, do you have enough people who want to work in them? They'd be like, yes, they need work. And then go straight down, to South America. There's plenty of countries down there that are looking for work that have large numbers of people. And when we look at a place like Puerto Rico, I'm an American exceptionalist and a capitalist. And if that triggers you and, you know, you don't like it, tough shit. You know, that's how I feel. I think capitalism and America is a force for good in the world. Why isn't Puerto Rico the 51st state? Make Puerto Rico the 51st state and let's go. I'm fine with having 60 states. I mean, why are we?
Didn't you hear that Trump wanted to sell Puerto Rico? Do you remember that news?
This person is not to be taken seriously. I don't think the leadership we have has proven itself incapable of handling a crisis. Period, and that goes for states that goes for, you know, cities, and it certainly goes for the federal government. There are very few people who in our government are getting the stuff right. We need to rethink the whole thing now that it's collapsing under the weight of something as simple as wearing a mask that we can't agree on or get people to do. You have to really think that through. But I'm for us having more redundancy. And if the government has to create incentives for that, that's fine. Japan is creating incentives for people to move there, for Japanese companies to move their factories out of China because they don't want to have too big of a dependency. And that's the thing, is it just became too big of a dependency.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think really it comes down to this investment, right, that the U.S. has to put into electric vehicles, and not just, you know, in creating facilities to build batteries and to build cars, but also to build like homegrown engineering, right? To promote STEM programs in schools, and maybe even have like, you know, automakers get into the school systems and be like, hey, you know, we have all this curriculum for you to work in an electric vehicle factory to be like an EV engineer, something like that, right? And I think that's how you really become a leader, because I know in China, that's what they're doing with all these companies that are owned by the state, and you know, they're doing these training programs in the schools.
It used to be that every smart person in the world wanted to come to America. And then we stopped letting them in. And you know where they were going? They're staying where they are, or they're going to Canada. And, you know, hopefully if we have a change in leadership, we can really start thinking about immigration. And it really is interesting how we, you know, we're talking about transportation, but you know, this is, transportation is such an important part of people's lives that it does in fact impact a lot of the political issues, you know, in the world. And it would be very simple for us to make a 2-year free college for STEM, or a 4-year or a 6-year. And I'm a tiny investor in a company called Lambda School, which does an income sharing agreement. It's called an ISA. And these are just like creative things. Basically, you go to school there, you learn to become a developer. You can either pay $20,000, which is cheaper than a lot of other schools, per year, and you become a developer. Or you can pay $30,000 if you get a job, I think, over $50,000 within 2 years or 4 years or something. And these income sharing agreements basically would be like Harvard or Georgetown or your community college saying, okay, it's going to cost us $20,000, $30,000, $50,000 to educate you. If you get a job, then you pay us back. If you don't get a job, we rip it up. And that's the kind of model that America should start moving to. And I agree, you know, education's part of that and immigration's part of it. The immigration policy in Australia and Canada and most of the developed West is a point-based system. So they will have some number of people allowed to immigrate because they are under human rights duress in their country. In other words, if they go back, they're going to be murdered or jailed because of being Muslim or gay or whatever it happens to be that is not allowed in the country they're fleeing. And we want to be compassionate and we want to take in a certain number of immigrants based on that. Then there's graduate degrees, there's your ability to invest and your ability to speak the language natively, and other countries will create a point system and you add up the points. And it's a very sensible system. And we in the United States have turned this into this like political hot potato where you're either for no border and you want, you know, the free traffic of, you know, gang violence and, you know, fentanyl coming across the border, or you want to build a 30-foot wall. Like, it really isn't, that is not the issue of immigration. The immigration is, here's a list of people who want to come. Here's an application process. Here's an interview process, and here's what we need to make our country thrive so that we can take in as many people as possible compassionately. And these two things need to counterbalance. You know, Elon, as an example, is from South Africa. And so, you know, Elon's created a lot of value for the country, and then that gives us the ability to let more people in based upon being refugees from, you know, totalitarian countries. You know, Steve Jobs' father was an immigrant. And there's many other immigrant entrepreneurs, I could go through the list, or children of immigrants. So, you know, immigration is just this great tool we can use to be both compassionate and capitalists and to solve problems. Right. And so when you and I talk on a podcast, this gets really easy. If you and I were politicians right now, we would have had to pick a side, mm-hmm. and we would not be allowed to change our minds. In this conversation, I can change my mind if you convince me of something different. And if you do, that would be a great experience for me on the podcast. And that's why podcasting's booming.
Jason Calcanis for president 2024. Do you want to announce your presidential run on this podcast? It might boost the numbers.
I am not going to. I think Kanye said, sorry, I'm not actually running for president.
Yeah, I think he's dropping out. Oof. So for anyone who
Biden was really sweating that one.
Kanye West.
I'm not kidding. I think Biden was sweating that one for 15 seconds. He's like, what if he actually, like, you know, 5% of people actually write in Kanye West and Trump wins? That was the insider's thinking was like, what if Kanye is like on Team Trump and he's just trying to chip away the black vote or, you know, whatever small number of votes he can to give Trump another shot? Obviously, that was not the case.
I mean, I think none of us are surprised by anything nowadays. So it's 2020, quite a possibility. Still undefeated. There you go. Well, hey, when we come back from break on the Inside Transportation podcast, we're going to talk about two things you love. First of all, we're going to talk about the Ford Bronco, which I'm sure you have some thoughts on, and this really cool Model V Tesla mock-up somebody made on Twitter, and you know, we'll do a little dope or nope there, so stay tuned.
Hey, everybody, let me take a moment to thank Fenwick and West. They're one of the world's first and leading law firms dedicated to technology and life sciences. They operate in the fast lane of innovation where ideas often outpace changes in the law. That's where you find Fenwick's autonomous transportation and shared mobility practice, steering startups, technology giants, and major automotive companies through rapidly evolving legal, business, and regulatory challenges, which we talk about here on Inside Transportation all the time. A Silicon Valley original, Fenwick is a national law firm with offices in Mountain View, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Santa Monica, and even Shanghai. So here's your call to action. Learn more about how Fenwick can help companies tackle the complex legal and business issues of autonomous transportation at fenwick.com. That's FENWICK.com. Thanks again to Fenwick for providing great legal services to me. I use them personally for our investments and for supporting independent media like Inside Transportation. Let's get back to this amazing episode.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation podcast. Could Uber change as we know it when we get out of the pandemic? Uber is now allowing drivers in California to set their own rates using a multiplier. So, for instance, a driver can pick if they want a 2x or 3x their normal rate at the time. This pricing experiment first launched in Palm Springs, Santa Barbara, and Sacramento earlier this year, and comes as the company battles initiatives to classify its fleet of drivers as company employees. The state of California actually sued Uber in May, claiming its workers were employees of the company. But some drivers have actually opposed, first of all, being classified as company employees. Secondly,
they don't want to be employees.
Drivers are opposed to this new rate-setting policy that they have because it could be a race to the bottom. So what are some of your thoughts? Because I know these companies are joining together to put Prop 22 on the California ballot, which is backed by $110 million from DoorDash, Uber, and Lyft. I guess my question is, from what you've noticed, first of all, do you think something like a Prop 22 would pass in California? And I have a few thoughts there too. But you know, overall, what do you think of this pricing change or this pricing model change?
Yeah, so I'll let you give your thoughts on Proposition 22, but just this is exactly how ride-sharing started. There was a company called Sidecar, and what you would do is you'd put in your destination and what you were willing to pay, and then if somebody was willing to take you, they would confirm the ride. Yes. And so I tested this when I was an early Uber investor, and I was going from San Francisco to Palo Alto, and I could have taken Caltrains or a taxi or rented a car, whatever it was. And I just put in, like, I think I put in $25 and $30. And a guy picked me up in a car that was kind of falling apart. His seat was laid back, touching the back seat. You know the guy who lays down and drives?
Yeah,
you
know, like the guy you hate. 70.
I hate that guy. So I get that guy. The car smells like cigarettes. And he's whipping down the 280, you know, while looking at his phone. And I was like, well, I almost died, but This is like a third of the price if I took an Uber, and Uber at the time was the only Uber black. And so I called right. Travis and I was like, what do you think of this? And he's like, yeah, it's interesting, whatever. And so if you set your own price, if you set your own hours, if you use your own equipment, you are an independent contractor. So what California is doing is, they are trying to say that what real estate, brokers, what, gardeners and freelancers, your pool cleaner, a freelance writer like yourself, what people do, all the time, which is set a rate and do gig work. I mean, Uber did not invent gig work. They just put it in an app. Postmates mm-hmm. didn't invent it. Lyft didn't invent it. People have always been able to set prices in a market like that. So why is there this big fight? Well, the big fight is really because we only have two classes of employees. And in these systems, they've gotten so large that you have multiple constituents within one app. Real estate brokers do not get paid salaries. They get paid on commission. And so they were exempted from this law, is my understanding. So depending on your ability to lobby politicians, in other words, give them money, pay them off, you can get excluded from being a contractor or not. And we saw this with the freelance writers. We're like, I think it was Vox who said, we're not going to have freelancers in California anymore. And
yeah,
people
I think
were like,
SB Nation, right? SB Nation.
SB Nation was like, yeah, sorry, we're just not going to take on this liability. So unintended consequences by overregulation is really dangerous. And you saw this also when they tried to say there's a limit on, you know, what you can charge for your commission on Uber Eats or Postmates or DoorDash.
Yeah.
In which case people were like, okay, well, we're not going to service these three or four areas
right.
because we will lose
San
money.
Francisco earlier this
it
year.
It happened
right?
with Treasure yeah. Island. I think we actually talked about it. Yeah. So politician, this goes to the overall free market versus politicians screwing things up. There are only two classes of employees in this country. You can either be an independent contractor, you can be full-time. If you're an independent contractor, there used to be like a test you'd go through, and each state has some, you know, role in it. And people who are doing Uber 50, 60 hours a week or Lyft or Postmates, okay, if they're only working for one platform, right, mm-hmm. and those platforms are setting their hours, which they're not, you start to get into this gray area. Well, the number of hours feels like full-time, doesn't it? But they right. do set their hours, and you can't set your hours with a job, right? Most jobs, if you are full-time. And so then why do people want to be full-time? Well, they want to be full-time so they can get benefits. Okay, mm-hmm. what is the benefit they want? They want healthcare. So this all comes down to healthcare. If there
Agreed,
was...
yeah. That's a really good point.
if there was healthcare, then nobody would be bringing this up. It's who has to pay the outrageous cost of healthcare. And so what's going to happen with all this is it's going to go all the way to the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. All the states are going to lose at this point because when you set your own prices and set your own hours, you're an independent contractor. So the states are setting themselves up for a huge loss. So then why are they doing this? Well, I think a lot of it is virtue signaling or just, you know, the frustration with these companies getting so big mm-hmm. And the valuations of these companies and not appreciating the jobs themselves. And so what these companies will do is if they're forced to make people full-time, they're going to lose half their drivers mm-hmm. because more than half the drivers, from what I understand, depending on the platform, they want to work 5, 10 hours, 20 hours. They don't want to work full-time. Mm-hmm. So then it's going to become a full-time job, which yeah. means the stay-at-home parent who wanted to drop their kids off at school, do two jobs on Uber or Lyft, pick their kids up from school, have lunch with them, then, you know, during the evening rush, they, you know, one parent fed the kids, the other parent did the DoorDash, you know, and got paid the extra premium on tips or whatever. And they actually got to make their own hours and spend more time with their families and then write the great American novel because they could, you know, pay off their debt and, you know, have this flexibility. The jobs are going to go away. And then these idiotic, you know, politicians are going to be like, oh, we drove the jobs out. We drove away these jobs. And they will fold. And what the Supreme Court needs to do, and real leadership would say is, and you see Dara at Uber trying to put this olive branch out, which is Hey, yeah, let's give people some benefits. Let's give them some of what they want. Mm-hmm. And if it was me, I would just say it very simply. When you hit 1,000 hours, we give you, you know, whatever, $1,000 towards healthcare in this healthcare fund. When you hit, you know, whatever it is, every hour you work for us, every $1,000, every $20,000 you make, we put 2% of it, 6% of it, I don't know, pick the percent, into a healthcare fund for you. And if not, you're going to be only able to work for one service. Because the thing is, when you're an independent contractor, and you're an independent contractor for Inside,
yes,
I can't stop you from taking other jobs. I can't tell you what hours to work. I can maybe tell you I need you to deliver your newsletter by this time. Mm-hmm. And like, even that is like, okay, that's, I think that's as much control as we can have over you. It's like, we need the work by 1 o'clock or something.
Right, right.
We can't like literally tell you, you know, you have to show up at work at this time and be offline at this time. We can give you a window, basically deliver it during this time, something like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's a lot of
virtue signaling.
Yes. No. So you're spot on there, right? Because at the end of the day, just because you're a company employee for Uber doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have amazing benefits, amazing, you know, unemployment, amazing insurance, right? It's just like a you know, something that politicians are trying to do because they think, okay, if you're a full-time employee, you're going to have healthcare and all this stuff, right? But that's a bigger problem with our healthcare system in the U.S., like you pointed out. And when you look at the text of Proposition 22, because I looked into it a little bit, in California, a yes vote basically means you support Uber and Lyft and DoorDash being able to classify these workers as independent contractors, right? And I think there might be some confusion there where Uber actually ends up winning out when you see how much money they're going to put into this proposition. And you're going to see, I think there's going to be a lot of threat marketing when you get closer to this election. There's going to be a lot of, you know, threats from Uber and DoorDash saying, well, we're going to pull out of California if, you know, this passes, right? Or if this doesn't pass. And that kind of shows you how confusing this legislation is. So, I mean, I think that's what we're going to see. But ultimately, I think Prop 22 is going to pass. I think when you put that out there, when you properly explain what's happening with all of this, it's just going to pass because at the end of the day, the consumer is going to value the service itself versus the conditions of the people who work for it. Because, you know, if we were all, if, you know, consumers were all so concerned about work conditions for the people that bring us, you know, in an Uber ride, or even when you think about our food, like supply, you know, our food chain supply, right? And different things where people are being abused for, you know, like, $3
quote
an hour,
unquote abused.
Yeah, you think about people who are like picking strawberries, or people who are picking you know, fruit.
Backbreaking labor in the hot sun for minimum wage.
Right,
those people don't count. But
how come we're not vouching for them? Right.
Yeah.
That's the real question. It's all like,
well, I think it's, you know, maybe they don't speak the language. Maybe they're first generation. Like, I think there's a little bit of racism there, I'll be totally honest. And then also there's this concept that there's no free will and no competition going on here. You know, the and I've said this before on the podcast, when Uber and DoorDash and all these services appeared and people could start making their own hours, the value of that and the amount they made led places like Walmart, Apple stores, Starbucks, et cetera, raise their hourly rates. And so that is another thing to consider here is that, you know, any employment added in a country with low unemployment creates competition. And you don't want to be, and I think one of the reasons we hit this record low unemployment was because of the gig economy.
Right.
It's because you could say to me at any time, you know what, Jason, you're not paying me enough. Please don't say that. But you could say that to me and say, I, you know, Uber, me being an Uber driver or me being a DoorDash driver would pay more, or me working in the Apple store would pay more, or Starbucks just came up a thing where you can work any 4-hour shift you want instead of working an 8-hour shift. Let's just say they did that, right? They broke the shifts in half so you could have more flexibility. So I just want to work at Starbucks 4 hours. I don't want to actually have to think about writing and talking on a podcast. I just want to, you know, make lattes all day. So it is a free market. There is competition. The laws are antiquated. The law needs to evolve. And this is the noisy process under which that happens in our system. And my expectation is there will be a third way soon. We'll have a third option between independent and full-time. And I say we let companies and workers pick. I want to be full-time, I want to be 1099, or I would like to be part-time. And let's just say part-time with Benny's, you know? And part-time with Benny's might not get the same rate as 1099, mm-hmm. right? So 1099, you might get, you know, 100%. You might get whatever it is. Let's say 30% of whatever the amount is, or 25%. Let's just pick 30. You get 30%. But if you want to be with Benny's, okay, we get to set your hours, and we take whatever out, and you get 20% of each ride, right? Or you just get a flat hourly rate, and you're never going to get any of the surge pricing.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, you're working on Thanksgiving, you're working New Year's Eve. And if you want to work here, then you have to work on Sundays and you have to work Mondays when your kids would be in bed, you know, be going to bed, and because that's when food gets delivered. So we need you from 3 to 7 p.m. so you don't get to see your family. Like literally that's what will happen, is the shift that will be set by full-time employment for transportation will be the one when transportation and food delivery is occurring. Right. So all those people who get paid a premium for working those time are now going to get paid minimum wage for that time. Congratulations, government intervention.
There you go. Well, now for something a little bit more fun. It's time for our weekly segment where we try to decide if a future concept or product is something that's dope or nope. This week, we're looking at two different things here. The first one is this eVTOL, because I know you love eVTOLs. One I Twitter love user.
They're all EV, by the way. There's no such thing as an eVTOL. That's called a helicopter. Right?
Good point.
Like,
good
there's no gasoline power. I mean, I could be wrong. Is there a gasoline powered VTOL?
There's a hydrogen. And I think you actually sent me something this week.
That's right. The
it's like a hydrogen propelled VTOL, right?
Good luck
and
with that.
So that's the other technology. But I think some of the VTOL technology also has to do with how the rotors and all that stuff is positioned. But
sure, of course.
One Twitter user mocked up this potential Twitter VTOL that would be called the Model V. Elon even said it looks pretty cool. What's your take on it? It looks really futuristic.
It's clearly dope. It's clearly dope. It's clearly not. It's clear this person has not field tested any of these devices because the way the rotors are set up is incorrect, I believe. And I'm no expert on this, but you know, like it looks really heavy where the landing gear is, and it's got a giant rotor on the front and then two on each side. I don't think that's the proper way to set these up. I think the way these get set up is like you have them like a rectangle or a square where you have instead of a triangle. So I don't think they work in the triangle formation. But it does look like something out of Blade Runner or Westworld. And for that reason, I give anything that flies humans quietly on electric power over cities, over roads, dope.
How do you even get into this thing? That's my question.
This one is just made to be like, this is just Clone Wars. It looks like something out of Star Wars.
Yeah, but I'm like, come on, hypothetically speaking, how do you even get inside? I thought it was kind of interesting.
Well, for the ones that are out there now, they typically have cockpits that look similar to fighter cockpits or like a 2 or 4 seat turboprop or prop plane where the canopy opens. They're basically canopies. This one, it just looks like there's like a tiny little black canopy in the middle, but it's in the show notes.
I see, yeah.
And it's in inside.com/transportation. So that little black area behind the Tesla logo in the middle, I believe is supposed to be the canopy, which, you know, like in Top Gun would pop open and you'd shoot out with a parachute, which is, you don't have to do in a VTOL.
Do you think Tesla's ever going to get into the VTOL space?
There's a famous scene where in Iron Man 2, Elon and Tony Stark, Elon says something about like, oh yeah, you know, I'm working on an electric airplane. Tony's like, yeah, I'll get right back to you on that. And so I've actually talked to Elon about it. And I've talked to many people in the industry about the electric ones. The density of the batteries and the weight of them makes it really hard. There is a company that is making electric airplanes already. They're the company Cape Air, I believe. Let me just type this in. Cape Air electric plane. So there is an electrifying, there is an electric plane that actually works for a commuter plane. It would be like kind of, you can see it if you're, you're typing in Cape Air.
Notes. Yeah, I see it right here.
And so they put an order for these in. Cape Air flies like Nantucket, I believe, Martha's Vineyard, the Cape Cod, you know, Long Island kind of thing. And they're, you know, these are like 30 minute, you know, little puddle jumper kind of situations. And, these could work because you would, you wouldn't be able to bring a lot of bags. They have to have giant wings. You have to also recharge the batteries. There's a lot of issues left, but I think it's going to work for, you know, small planes, to start.
Yeah, I think now that you mentioned Cape Air, I think the comedian Pete Davidson has a stand-up routine about flying Cape Air and how they specifically have you sit in a certain seat because of the weight
based
distribution
on weight
or something like that.
Yeah, that's when you—that's when I get off the plane.
Yeah, I'll send you that in the or
in the show notes. Put the routine in the show notes.
I'm putting the routine in the show notes. Lastly, what we've all been waiting for, this discussion on the Ford Bronco this week. Ford unveiled the new Bronco, a revamped version of the SUV that was discontinued in 1996. Just for reference, it was discontinued because it was making way for the Ford Explorer and the Expedition, not because of OJ. A lot of people think that the Bronco was discontinued because
bullshit.
Of OJ, right?
I think it was OJ. No,
so there's
OJ.
Two different versions of the Bronco. One of them is the Bronco, which looks like a Jeep Wrangler. It's going to start
two-door.
At about... Yeah, it's two-door. It's going to start at $29,995.
Wow.
But there's going to be models priced into the 60,000s. The Bronco Sport SUV is going to be more of like a traditional SUV, and it's going to be comparable to like the Jeep Compass. But it seems like they're really angling to compete with Jeep, which is kind of interesting considering that Jeep is actually a cash cow for Fiat, which is the owner
of
Jeep.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, they haven't really done much to revolutionize what works for them, right? So I don't
just
think
the Gladiator.
Been, yeah.
The Gladiator is the only real, putting a pickup truck bed. And I'm going to probably get a Gladiator. I'm going to try to get, like, or a used Wrangler because, you know, like, I'm going to get a place up in Tahoe, I think, for skiing, like a, just like a little cabin. And I want to just have something in case it snows us in. But did you notice the doors on the orange two-door Bronco with the cutouts in them?
Yes. What do you think? So you wouldn't
Dope.
Get a Bronco as your getaway car, the one you always talk
yeah,
about?
My, yeah, the getaway car, my go car, right? Which you can, right now I really covet, if the Cybertruck was out, that'd be a hands down, I'd get that. Mm-hmm. But that's 2 years out, I think. And so I'll definitely get the Cybertruck. In between that, I was thinking about just buying a beat up used Wrangler, either the four door or maybe even like a slightly used a Gladiator with the flatbed in the back so I could throw bags and skis and stuff in it. I got to see if the skis actually fit in it, if that makes sense. Like if the skis don't fit in the back, then what's the point? Because I'm going to have to climb up on the top, in which case then the Bronco makes sense. So just off the bat, at this price range, at this look, I think it's super dope, and I think they actually did a better job of keeping the lines from the original while modernizing it than the Defender did.
Mm.
Do you agree with that?
Yes. I think...
the Defender looks not enough like a Defender, but the Bronco looks exactly like a Bronco.
Right, but it looks so good.
The Bronco's beautiful.
Like, the Bronco... like. I'm so impressed that they were able to, and by the way, I'm not just saying this because Ford is a sponsor of this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about it. I don't want the Ford Mustang is, I don't like the Ford Mustang in the way they, I understand why they made it a crossover, their EV one? It would
yeah, it's
considered
like,
a crossover.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I would have rather, as I told them, we had Sandeep on, I was like, I'd rather it just be like a classic pony car. I like the idea of just mimicking the original. And I think this thing is going to sell out. I also noticed they're taking $100 deposits. I wonder where they got that idea.
I will say the one thing, because I've driven a Wrangler for a bit. And did you know the Wrangler doesn't have Bluetooth? You can't stream audio on the new models, right? So that's what is very interesting about the Bronco is, if you've seen the interior, it has a really nice like technology suite, right? And I think that's one thing where the Bronco is actually going to edge out Jeep, is that they have really nice technology. I think they have some level of automated driving as
So the Wrangler, you need to get a third party. You have to replace the radio basically to Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Or get some one of those little fugazi, like cigarette lighter, go over FM jammies.
Yeah, yeah. That's how the Wrangler is. So I think...
What is the point of doing that? Are they just trying to make a statement like you shouldn't be on your phone while driving a Wrangler because you're driving over a mountain? Is that like some statement?
I think they want to really preserve like the spirit of the Wrangler.
No.
There
is
an aux cable. There's an aux cable though. So there you go.
Oh God, it's an... I like CD a good aux player. I'll tell you what. I like a good aux player.
But this looks sick, by the way. I can't get over how sick Bronco looks. Man.
It's sick. I mean, like, I want to see one of these things, like, on a course roll over, like, twice, and like, just keep driving. Like, it looks sturdy, you know what I'm saying? Like, the roll
and the
cage.
The price
and the rooftop.
Is amazing.
I want to see one roll over. 30 dimes is like, it's, and if it's a, I believe in the United States, like, you can depreciate trucks for business if it was a business expense. Like, you can deduct or you can depreciate it all in the first year or something crazy like that. So anyway, this shit's mad dope. I don't even
say
that's
why
it's,
I love
we're not
being
even
an independent
dope or
contractor
nope.
too.
it's mad dope. Oh, yeah, exactly. You have to say either this is dope or mad dope. That's the level we're at now. So is it dope or mad dope?
Mad dope. And let me
tell
you this.
I agree, it's mad dope.
Let me tell you
this. Congratulations.
I just tried to get on to the Ford Bronco website, right? And this is what it says. Due to overwhelming demand, it's taking a little longer to process your request just to get on to the website. So there's a lot of people that are
interested in this car. It trended, and instantly, like Cybertruck. And this is the impact, I think, you know, Tesla's having on the industry, which is you can't just, like... you know, every 6, 7, 8 years, like refresh last year, you know, the last, you know, that cadence is over. You know, if Elon's going to just pop out like a Cybertruck every 2 years or, you know, the Roadster 2 or the Y, like he's just put them on a different cadence now. And the expectation of consumers is going to be higher. Like we want the future. We want it now. And I mean, congratulations to Ford because this is the first time. Let's just go through. I'm going to take you through a series here. I'm going to do a little round robin. Ford Wrangler, Land Rover Defender.
Repeat that. Sorry.
Would you take the Wrangler or the Defender?
The Defender.
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 Defender or Cybertruck? 3, 2.
Cybertruck.
1. Okay. Now, would you take the Defender or the Bronco?
The Bronco.
Got it. So your top two are Bronco and Cybertruck.
Mm-hmm.
So
what about you?
Okay. So I go Wrangler beats Defender for me right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Kind of interesting, though. Like that you would.
I just like the Gladiator. It's something I like the rawness of the Wrangler. But it's really a jump ball for me. It's not like a, you know, 90-10. It's a 55-45. But I'm going to go Wrangler over Defender right now.
Even with kids, you would get the Wrangler.
Yes.
Huh.
I want to have fun. I want to just like rip it in the snow, you know? Like that's important to me. And then if I go Wrangler versus Bronco, I go Bronco all day. If I go Wrangler versus Cybertruck, I go Cybertruck all day.
Mm-hmm.
So now the question becomes, we're in a two-horse race here. Bronco or Cybertruck?
What if the Bronco, because I'm sure the ultimate plan for the Bronco is to develop it as its own brand within Ford.
Okay.
EV Bronco versus Cybertruck. What do you pick?
I have to go Cybertruck because I just think it's so radical and crazy. But it's not 90-10. It's 65-35. Like it's, I think I would be happy with both. I would be, mm-hmm. I think I'd be delighted with both. I'll say that. And you know, so for me, Cybertruck EV versus Bronco, it kind of, I give the Cybertruck because I like electric. But again, it's pretty astounding to me that Ford came out with a product that, you know, this good.
Yeah.
You know, it really is like, and the fact that they are competing now with Tesla, like this is a real competition, I would say. What do you think? EV, Bronco, Cybertruck? Because now we're talking about aesthetics, right? It's so hard. It's so hard. I tell you what, you get one idea.
I'll go Cybertruck because it has autopilot. That's when small details, right? Because a lot of people don't think about this, but like if you think about supercharging and autopilot, I mean, those are exclusive to Tesla. And I think that's why they're kind of the little details that matter a lot to people when they're making that buying decision, right? Between
the superchargers have gotten wild, by the way. Like, I don't know if you saw somebody tweeted the other day, like they made a before and after, like they added like 150 miles in 9 minutes.
Like,
I think Tesla's been sandbagging the performance of the superchargers. You know, like it used to be people would accuse Tesla of like, I didn't get exactly that range, you know, and now people, you know, like you're being a little too best scenario with the range or with the charging. And you used to see a lot of tweets like that or blog posts like, I am, you know, I actually used my own GPS and I got this mileage and you said this mileage. Now I'm seeing the opposite where people are like, yeah, I'm getting like 340 range, you know, and it said 310 or 290. And you said it was going to, you know, add 150 miles. It added 180 miles. Like, I think they're sandbagging a little bit now. They're getting that good. And when is the battery announcement? That's coming, right?
It's coming September.
What do you think? I have, you know, I don't...
Million mile battery. I think that's what it's going to be. They're developing a million mile battery, which will last a million miles. So
the batteries right now degrade 20% in 500,000 miles or something?
I think. But I guess
why would anybody go through the expense of replacing them?
If
it went to 80%, it still would still be good enough.
So the battery that they're developing is, they get cost lower too because of the components in it. It's not just about the million miles, but it's also about getting the battery cost to, you know, parity with an ICE car, right? That's the big promise. But when you think about reusing this battery, I mean, you can, once you're done using it, you know, for your car, you can use it for energy storage, right?
Oh, and so that's what's gonna
be, that's what's gonna be killer, right? Because once you have all of these old EV batteries, instead of buying like a Tesla Powerwall, which costs like $10,000, you can use an old EV battery to store solar energy. So that's like the big thing. So for me, one of the most the things I'm most excited for in the EV space coming up is that announcement, because we're going to see vehicle to grid come, you know, on board. And I think that's when people are really going to see that it's more than just driving, right? It's about just revolutionizing energy, like how you get electricity.
Yeah, just imagine like you're like, oh, yeah, you know, honey, you know, the old 300-mile battery is only getting 220 now. It's gone down, whatever, 30%. What should we do? Why don't we just slap it on the wall? Just lean it up against the wall in the back of the garage and plug it in. And I'll go pick up a new one. They're only $10,000. I'll pick up a new one. And then, like, you know, there'll be a resale. Like, hey, anybody need an extra, you know, like Tesla Model S, X, you know, battery? It's still good for 150 miles / you know, back up your house for 2 days.
I mean, you're going to see like all these energy companies get really scared because like,
thank God we got to save the planet.
There's going to be a totally alternative energy company because you can just put solar panels on your roof, use your old car battery. Boom. You don't need the energy company anymore. So it'll be so interesting to see what happens. But as always, we got to wrap up the show.
Let's wrap up. I think we went like over an hour and 10 minutes. Yes. An hour and 10 minutes today.
We cooked today. Yes.
It's a lot of soup getting cooked.
Yes. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. We'll see you all next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.